Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Week 12 edition of Flight Deck, an inside look at the New York Jets. I'm Rich Cimini. I cover the Jets for ESPN. Want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving, and I'd like to thank you for following along on the podcast, on social media, and on ESPN.com, of course. The storylines and commentary haven't been all that cheery for obvious reasons, so I really do appreciate the loyalty. I do have some positive news, though. Jets rookie standout Elijah Moore, who had a monster game against the Dolphins, will be our guest in the second segment, and you won't want to miss that. As for Sunday's game, a 24-17 loss, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it. It's pretty obvious what happened. The Jets finally face a team in their weight class, but they played young, which is to say they didn't play smart. Three killer penalties, a major coverage gaffe in the secondary, a pass protection blunder on the opponent's five-yard line. These were four drives. They had four drives into plus territory where they came away with 0 points. They didn't coach great either, wasting two timeouts. They just weren't a tight operation from top to bottom, and here we are. The Jets will be sitting down for their Thanksgiving dinner with a 2-8 record. But right now, I want to go big picture. I want to share with you this. During and after the games, ESPN reporters across the country were flooded with a lot of stats. Our stats group in Bristol does a great job. And so during the game, I'll pick and choose, you know, interesting stats, stats I think are the most relevant, and I'll post them on social media. And after the game, this one came across, and I had to do a double take. The Jets have lost their last 10 division games, 0-10 this year and last combined. The only team in the league with no divisional wins in that span. And it's like I knew that just because of the obvious record, but I didn't know it. And so that, folks, right there says everything about how far away the Jets are. You can't do anything in this league unless you can beat the teams in your own division. They're like the kids in your neighborhood. If you can't beat them, who can you beat? Not only are the Jets not winning these games, but they're not even competitive. In the 10 losses, they've been outscored 295 to 124. So basically, that's an average game of 29 to 12 loss. They've held a second half lead in only three of those games, and all three were last year. So the Jets are getting bullied by their kids in their own neighborhood, knocked to the ground, sand kicked in their face, and it's happening in the post-Tom Brady era when the division was supposedly going to be up for grabs. Well, we were wrong about that. It's the same as it ever was. The Patriots are in first place, the Bills are chasing, and the Jets and Dolphins are far off in the distance. Gee, I wonder why that is. And so here we are. The Jets are selling the future, selling it hard. Robert Saleh is a good salesman, too. He flipped Rex Ryan from an angry Saleh critic to Saleh's number one fan in just one phone conversation. Watching Rex on TV, it sounded like he was brainwashed into joining a Saleh cult. That was a fast 180, right? But I get it. The Jets have to look forward, and they have to believe in their plan. I actually talked to Saleh about this the other day, and he's absolutely convinced they're doing it the right way. Recent history shows that growth often occurs when playing so many young players. Each year, there's a handful of teams that reach the 9,000 snap threshold. Let me explain. 9,000 combined snaps for rookies, first and second year players. That's really young. From 2017 to 19, 19 teams hit the 9,000 snap mark in a season. Of those 19, 13 saw win increases the following year, and that win increase was about an average of about 3.5 wins. So history says the Jets should see a bump next year if they do it right, if they don't screw up their draft picks. Right now, they have the second and sixth picks, plus 2 second rounders and another 5 picks after that. This year's draft, 2021, looks promising with Elijah Moore leading the way. Now, Michael Carter is injured now. He's probably going to miss a couple of weeks with that ankle. He leads the team in yards from scrimmage. On his 39-yard run Sunday, did you see who made one of the key blocks? That was left guard Elijah Vera Tucker, another rookie. Zach Wilson? We'll see. I suspect he'll be back in the lineup this week, which would give him 7 games to get on the right track. So yeah, there's some potential in this draft, but general manager Joe Douglas needs to stack good drafts. Saleh is not exactly right about one thing, though. Discussing the youth movement, he said, in fairness, this is the first time this fan base has experienced something like this. Usually it's been a quick fix followed by a scramble. This time we actually have a plan, end quote. As Jet fans can attest, this is not the first time they've done this rebuilding thing. I agree with Saleh in the sense that it's the first time they've been this committed to a youth movement, but it's definitely not the first roster reset. John Idzik did it in 2013, and Mike Maccagnan did it again in 2017. That year, it was so obvious that everyone accused them of tanking. Remember that? Remember the suck for Sam narrative? Before jetting off to London, Woody Johnson told Mike Maccagnan to cut David Harris, to cut Eric Decker. They had big salaries, and Johnson couldn't understand why they were still on the roster. So out of the blue, in the middle of a June minicamp, team officials called Harris, one of their best soldiers ever, out of the locker room and told him he was being cut. Talk about awkward and unceremonious. They told the fans to be patient back then. Hang in there. It would pay big dividends down the road. They were empty promises, as you know. They never got better. And here we are again, another rebuilding phase. Now, that was before Saleh's time. It was before Douglas's time. So you can't blame them for that mess. This is their shot to fix the mess, and they should get that chance to do it their own way. But don't tell Jets fans they haven't been through this before. They've been living it for 50 years.
Now I'd like to welcome in our guest this week. He had his best day as a professional on Sunday with 8 catches for 141 yards and a touchdown. That was the most receiving yards by a Jets rookie since Rob Moore went for 175 all the way back in 1990. Of course, I'm talking about Elijah Moore. Elijah, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. No problem. Thank you for having me.
You've been in a groove lately. You know, you've had 24 catches over the last 4 games for 300-something yards. What's happening now for you that maybe wasn't happening early in the year?
I just feel like, you know, the more games that I'm, you know, getting to play, the more comfortable I'm feeling, you know. That's really what it comes down to. You know, the more opportunity, the more balls that come my way, the more I get to show. And I'm just blessed that, you know, I get to do that.
And I think we forget sometimes that you were injured in the preseason. I mean, you did have that quad injury, which didn't allow you to play in any of the preseason games. Do you think that affected you a little bit too, coming early in the regular season?
Yes and no. You know, I would say yes because, you know, just to get in the groove of everything, getting, you know, the little shakes and, you know, giggles out. But no at the same time because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, ball is ball, you know. So if you got to play 6 games to get comfortable, 1 game to get comfortable, at the end of the day, football's football. It's not going to change.
Right. You know, Joe Flacco made an interesting comment after Sunday's game. And, of course, Joe has not been here that long, you know, less than a month. But he said one of the things that he heard was that early in the year, maybe, and I'm paraphrasing him right now, he said, maybe you got caught up in doing a lot of stuff with your feet and your hands and that you've learned to modify it as time has gone on. Could you speak to that? Is there something maybe that you streamlined with your route running a little bit?
No, I just feel like it really just all comes down to, you know, understanding exactly what I'm doing and the whole picture to everything, you know, like why I'm running the route, why I'm doing this, you know. Not everything's just man. Not everything's about me. A lot of the times people run routes and it can be to open somebody else up, to understand why everything's piecing it together. You know, the coaches do, you know, a great job of staying up there all day and putting the best plan for us, you know, to go out there and win. And a lot of people don't understand. It's not about, you know, the me. It's about the we. So really just probably understanding that, you know, just understanding that football is not just about one-on-one, you know, it's about opening other people up too. So I think once I started understanding the bigger picture, you know, things are going to help out.
I thought you made such an impressive adjustment on the touchdown on Sunday. Obviously that Miami was blitzing. Could you talk about that play? And I remember you saying after the game, you knew there was pressure. You had to shorten your route a little bit. I thought that was so savvy for a rookie player to do. Could you maybe enlighten the fans on what exactly you had to do on that play?
It really wasn't too much. You know, Miami plays a lot of man and cover zero. So knowing that coming to the game, you know, you either got to speed your route up because they're going to bring a lot of blitzes. So that shortens up the amount of time that the quarterback has to throw. So you kind of look at it as like 7-on-7, you know, you just kind of have a feel for the route. You feel everybody else running, going to be in Joe's face. That would just only make sense for me to hurry up and try to get out my break quicker so he can see me. And that's kind of all I did.
And he made a heck of a throw on that play too. I mean, that was
a hell of a game, man. I'm grateful for him.
And, you know, it's funny, you know, you've only 10 games into your NFL career, you've already caught passes from four different quarterbacks, which doesn't happen often in the NFL. Could you speak to that and what it's been like going through, you know, from Zach to White to Flacco to Josh Johnson? What's that been like for a rookie to go through that?
A lot of people probably look at it as negative, but I look at it as positive. You know, if you can do it with anybody, then, man, I really can't be stopped. So it's just, you know, it's giving me more of a confidence that it doesn't matter who's in there. You know, if you grind with us, then, you know, I guess you fit the picture.
How much are you looking forward to Zach getting back? You guys obviously had a great chemistry on the practice field in OTAs and early in training camp. And I think you guys are kind of buds off the field as well. How much are you looking forward to Wilson getting back in there?
Man, I can't wait, man. Zach being healthy is all I think everybody in the facility wants, you know. Brings more of a joy, more of a smile to him too, you know, playing in the games and just being out there with his brothers. So having him back is definitely a positive.
Now you and Zach and AVT and Michael Carter, of course, part of this rookie class. I'm wondering from your perspective, Elijah, do you guys see yourselves as the rookie class that can turn things for this organization, that can be the foundational class that gets things started in the right direction?
Of course, you know, why would I not? You know, you got to look at yourself as the chosen one, as the ones to change everything. You know, if you don't think like that, then something's definitely wrong.
I talked to one of your Kevin Allen, of course, one of your personal coaches from back in your hometown in Fort Lauderdale. I spoke to him over the spring, and he said you text him to do workouts at Riverland Park in Fort Lauderdale. You know, sometimes it'll be late at night workouts, early in the morning. He just described that you have this maniacal work ethic. What do you recall about some of those workouts, and where does that come from, that work ethic?
Man, I just want to be the best. You know, it really just comes from being from South Florida. You know, I feel like everybody from where I'm from wants to make it out, you know, and football and track and stuff like that are such big advocates for, you know, for that. So it's really just a blessing that God chose me to be one of them people. And I definitely got to put on, you know, every time I go home, it gives me, you know, a different type of hunger, you know, to keep going, you know. So it really comes, I feel like, from being from where I'm from.
I mean, the level of football in South Florida is incredible. I mean, the competition that must have prepared you. You must have been facing guys in high school that went on to Division I and maybe even in the league right now, I would think.
Nah, yeah, 100%, man. The whole NFL is probably from Florida.
It seems like it sometimes. If you had to pick out a person in your life, Elijah, if you had to pick out a person who do you think's been most instrumental in your success, who would it be?
It's too many. I couldn't give you one.
Is it just family, friends, other
everybody,
players?
Man, everybody. It's the man on the street when I was 12 years old told me that I'm gonna make it. It's the man who told me on the street that told me that I wasn't good enough. It's everybody. You know, everybody definitely plays a big part in that. But, you know, first and foremost, I got to give all the thanks to God.
Obviously, you've been playing football most of your or all of your life. What is your earliest football memory?
My earliest football memory. Probably I didn't even want to play football when I was young. You know, my brother used to really just love it. And I loved basketball. So that's something I kind of always speak on. You know, I'm thankful for my brother telling me to stand in the middle of the grass growing up, trying to tackle him and take hits. So stuff like that really what got me, you know, engaged and wanted to be a competitor.
So you were a little reluctant at first to play football, and your brother got you into it, is
Yeah, 100%, man. I was definitely a basketball kid.
That's just interesting. So he kind of put you out on the lawn and said, here's the ball and run, and I'm going to tackle you.
Yeah, more like stand right here and I'm going to hit you.
One of those deals. One of those big brother, little brother moments.
Well, that's... Man, he won most of them.
I would say so. It's interesting. When did you know, Elijah, like at what point in your career did the thought enter your mind that, hey, I got a chance to be a professional football player?
And I always kind of knew, you know, when I was little, I always told my mom, told my parents that I was always going to, you know, I wanted to go to the NFL, and that I was. You know, it was just something that I kind of just spoke out to existence. You know, whenever you speak stuff like that, man, you are going to get, you know, what you receive. You know, your mouth is something very, very powerful. You know, your tongue is powerful. So really when I, you know, when I was like, probably 6-7 years old, man, I was telling my mom, and then high school, you know, when I started hearing about offers and I was just balling and stuff like that, when I realized that I probably could really, you know, really take this somewhere.
Wow. That is a very early confidence that you had in yourself.
Amen.
And of course you go to Ole Miss where, you know, you have a great career. In fact, we talk about the 141 yards you had on Sunday. You actually averaged 149 yards per game last year at Ole Miss, so you were used to that kind of production. You played with great players there like DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown. I just want to ask you about each of those guys, and maybe you can tell me something you learned or took away football-wise from either one of those guys. I know DK Metcalf is obviously a different kind of receiver than you because he's so big, but is there anything you learned from him being around him?
Yeah, first of all, speaking on college, I got to shout out to Kiffin. You know, Coach Kiffin was an exceptional coach and someone who taught me a lot about the game that I, you know, take and carry with me now. But speaking on AJ and DK, man, those are one of the most hard-working athletes, you know, I've ever been around. One of my main reasons for even picking Ole Miss to go there, you know, I wanted to learn from those cats, you know. So seeing their work ethic and just how, you know, football or not, they're unbelievable people. You know, the way they treat people, their, you know, the level of character and passion and pureness is contagious. So something like that has just helped me shape me into be a better human being. And I'm grateful for them, of course.
Now, what did either one of those guys serve as like your recruiting host when you went to visit them, or did you get to know
them? Both of them were.
Really?
Yeah.
So you show up to Ole Miss as a high school recruit, and both of those guys are showing you around campus?
Exactly.
Wow, that's a pretty, you must have been a highly coveted high school recruit to have both of those guys showing you around campus. That's like the red carpet treatment.
Yeah, man, a little something.
did you commit right away? Did you know as soon as you got there and started talking to those guys that this is the place for me?
Nah, not for real, man. I really, you know, I had to pray on it. You know, it was definitely some options of where I wanted to go to school. I feel like that decision for kids, you know, especially with, you know, having my parents let, you know, allowing me to make that decision for myself. You know, you young, man, that's a big decision. So it definitely wasn't easy, but I'm glad, you know, I chose where I ended up.
Now, we all know that you and AJ are so close. In fact, there's that famous video that when you guys were next to each other when you got drafted, that he actually got really emotional when you got picked by the Jets in the second round. Talk about your friendship and just how often do you guys keep in touch a lot now during the season? I know things get hectic during the season, but how often are you guys in touch with each other?
Man, I talk to AJ every day of my life. You know, it's more than family, man. It's like I got a different type of love for him. You know, he's like my actual brother. You know, it's like my mama had him for real.
Well, you know, he made a huge statement last week at his press conference, you know, when he came out and he spoke very openly about his battle with depression. In fact, his quote, he referred to you, how you helped him, and his exact words, Elijah, and I'm sure you know this, but he said, I love him like he's my brother. He is my brother. That's what he said about you. What did that mean to you? Just the courage he showed to go out publicly and speak about that, and also acknowledging how much you helped him.
Nah, it's definitely a blessing, you know, that he even had the courage to even do that. That's something definitely big that I think didn't even get enough light. You know, people, you know, us athletes go through things and people don't even realize that all these kids want to be like us and be us. But some of these athletes don't even want to be themselves, you know, so. Really, really just him speaking on that and having the courage to give somebody else that confidence and, you know, and to help and even speak on me. You know, he didn't have to do that. I didn't want no light for that. You know, as long as I help my, you know, my brother get on and if I can just listen, you know, that's something I would do 100 times over. So, man, 100 shout outs, 100 kudos to him.
How were you able to help him, Elijah?
Man, that's something that's, you know, between me and him. Man, I'd rather not speak on it.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand that. I totally understand it. But let me just did it surprise you when he came out publicly? And I guess you watching from, he did it on social media first. Watching from afar here in New York or New Jersey, I just wondered when that happened, like just what kind of emotions went through your body and just, you know, your initial reaction when he did it.
You know, it was just a great moment. You know, it was just something that, I told you again, that didn't really get enough light as if, you know, probably should have, but you know, it's all gonna come full circle. We give everything to God, so it's not, you know, we worry about. I'm just proud of him.
He also said at the beginning of the year that he would bet one of his checks that you would win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Now I know you got off to a little bit of a slow start, but is that still in the cards? Do you think that could still happen the way you've been playing lately?
Of course, man, it's the goal. I wouldn't change it. You know, my mindset doesn't change, so I just, you know, I stick with what I stick with. You know, there's obstacles are going to come, you know, you got to know that, but I'm always going to overcome because I'm not going to stop.
And just lastly, Elijah, obviously the year has not gone well from a one loss record at 2-8, not what you had in mind, but what do you hope for the last few games of the year as we get down to the stretch, the last 7 games, what do you see for yourself and what do you see for this offense over the final 7?
Just to finish strong, man, to get closer with my brothers on, you know, on the team. You know, to win and, you know, to have smiles at the end of the day, man. Football's a child's game, man. We just got to have fun. You know, life is too short to not be smiling, to be leaving these games, you know, happy, spending time with our families and smiling. So that's the main thing.
And speaking of families, got to ask you a Thanksgiving question. So what's Elijah Moore's Thanksgiving going to look like this year? Is there do you have a tradition, like a family tradition that you've had in the past? Usually it's a lot of people, it revolves around football. What about you? What's going to be like this? Of course, you have practice on Thursday. You have to take care of your job. But what are you going to be doing on Thursday?
Man, I'll just go with the flow. Usually, I can link up with the fam and stuff like that. But, you know, we got business to handle. So I'm going to probably have a good plate of food, man, watch some football or something, man, and just kick my feet up.
Well, I can certainly relate to that. That's what I do every year as well. So, Elijah Moore, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. Continued success for the remainder of the season.
Likewise. Thank you.
All right. It's Twitter time, and we have some provocative questions from our followers on Twitter. Thanks again for the great questions. And the first one is from @sports_FI3ND. With Elijah Moore's breakout game against Miami showing signs as a premier wide receiver in this offense, who was your favorite Jets receiver that you've covered during your tenure on the Jet Beat? Also, who does Moore's game remind you of from other notable receivers that you've seen? Well, here's my ideal wide receiver. If I could combine all these traits into one receiver, I'd have one hell of a wide receiver. I'd have a Pro Football Hall of Famer. I would take Al Toon's grace, Lavernius Coles' toughness, Brandon Marshall's power, Keyshawn Johnson's competitiveness, Wayne Krubet's hands, and Santana Moss's speed. Put all that together, I'll play anybody. I'd have one heck of a wide receiver. Now, for Elijah Moore, I think he reminds me a lot of Santana Moss, just from a body type, you know, about 5'10", excellent route runner, just so smooth in and out of his cuts. So that would be the guy who I would most associate with, at least in terms of a Jet comparison. Next one from @AlitoBitLazy. What were your takeaways on LDT? We're talking, of course, about Lawrence Duvernay-Tardif. And his first week back following 2 years off, he goes, I think he looked like he was dominating and I was impressed, but I didn't pay attention to every one of his plays. Well, let me throw out some knowledge for you on this. So he did really well as a run blocker. According to our ESPN stat metrics, which, you know, is somewhat subjective. We try to be as objective as we can be with the data we accumulate. But he was ranked 9th out of 57 guards this week in week 11 in run blocking. That's pretty good. Pretty good for a guy who hasn't played in a while. Now, pass blocking, kind of middle of the pack. He was 34th out of 54 guards across the league this week. He did have 6 first pressures and 1 sack, which is not great. But all things considered, I thought it was a good weekend for LDT. And, you know, look at the Chiefs. Obviously, the Jets got him from the Chiefs. They just cut Dan Brown last week. He's the guy who was involved in this trade. So Joe Douglas does have a knack of making good trades. It seems like the guys he traded away recently really haven't panned out, you know, and I'm thinking, of course, mostly Sam Darnold. Daniel Brown gets cut. Of course, not exactly a big name, you know, household name there, but still. So a promising first step for LDT. I think you're going to see him in the lineup for as long as he stays healthy. Next question at Dennis K. Harris. All perennial losing teams have one thing in common, poor ownership. The Jets have been through countless heads, coaches, players, GMs. We can't continue to blame them. Is there any chance we could get a billboard like the Idzik one for Woody Johnson to sell the team and have a Packer-style ownership? Well, obviously, Woody Johnson is not going to sell the team, which is probably valued at least at a couple of billion dollars right now. He's not going to do that. I think he's probably setting the stage for his younger son to take over someday. But, you know, you make some interesting points. Woody Johnson made the playoffs in 6 of his first 11 years as an owner. I think a lot of that was the fact that Bill Parcells set up the organization when he left. And I think Woody Johnson was kind of riding the coattails of Bill Parcells there a little bit. Now, he did have those 2 years with Rex Ryan, so I give credit to Woody Johnson for that. That was, of course, 09 and 10. But now they are involved. And they are mired in the longest playoff drought in the league, longest active playoff drought. He's made some horrible decisions regarding coaches and GMs. He was all in on Tebow. He wanted Revis a second time and threw ridiculous money at him. And the team is just stuck in an endless rebuilding cycle. The fans are just frustrated, and that frustration is warranted. So I think you have every right to be upset at Woody Johnson. Now, granted, he was away for 3 years. His brother Christopher was running the show. But taken as a whole over the last 20 years, you have every right to be upset with ownership of this team. At Dan Schnock's question, the lack of attention to some details is concerning, even for a first-year head coach. The delay penalties at inopportune moments are a glaring example of that. It seems to me that a head coach either has this attention to detail or they don't. What do you think? Well, you know, they did have 2 wasted timeouts on Sunday. They were having confusion with their substitution, and that's on coaching. And Robert Saleh said that after the game. It's on coaching, and they got to get it fixed. In terms of the delay penalties, the Jets have 4 delay penalties this year, and I looked it up. The high is 6. The Detroit Lions have 6 delay penalties. There are 9 teams with 5 or 6. So the Jets are right in that 10 to whatever group. And it's interesting to note the Patriots, obviously a very well-coached team with Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, they have 5 delay penalties, more than the Jets. And a rookie quarterback has something to do with that. So the Jets aren't alone in that fact. So I think on paper, the stats don't indicate a lack of attention to detail. But I think in terms of the eye test, I think at times there is a lack of attention to detail with some wasted timeouts and some inopportune mistakes. So I think you're on to something there. Next question at Monty 1 Capoletti. I have read that the defense will likely have 5 to 7 new starters next year. Assuming you agree, which 5 to 7 guys are out in your opinion? Well, let me just say the ones I think will be back as starters. Of course, Carl Lawson coming back from the injury, Quinnen Williams, JFM, CJ Mosley, Bryce Hall, and I think Michael Carter II. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that's 6 right there if you count Carter as a starter. I think guys like Rankins and Ashton Davis are kind of borderline, but the rest is wide open, And so I do think you'll see, you know, 5, maybe 6 new starters on defense after the offseason. At J_Bird44, Hi, Rich. Curious as to what made Rex Ryan publicly change his tune on Saleh's strategy for turning the Jets around. Any additional insight would be great. Thanks and go Orange. One of my fellow Cuse guys here with the question. Yeah, that was a stunning change of heart by Rex Ryan. He eviscerates Robert Saleh on ESPN Radio last Monday and then goes on NFL Countdown on Sunday and does a complete 180, says he's a Robert Saleh fan. He's reached out to Robert Saleh, which I give Rex credit for doing. He reached out to him. They talked about it. Obviously, he bought what Saleh was selling him over the phone, and now Rex Ryan is all in. It was just a stunning change. I don't know what prompted it, to be quite honest with you, but it's not often that you see someone go from criticizing someone to praising him with such extremes on both sides. So that was a shocker, to say the least. And another question, our last question. We're talking quarterbacks here from at BDTT Sports. Is the continued statistical success by the backup quarterbacks a good sign for when Zach Wilson comes back? Or does it add more pressure and concern for his play? I think the answer is both. Flacco, White, and Josh Johnson have combined for 11 touchdowns and 9 interceptions, and they're all completing at least 64% of their passes. Zach Wilson, only 4 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, and just a 57% completion rate. So I think it's a good sign because it shows that the offense is quarterback friendly. In Flacco, White, and Johnson, we're not exactly talking about elite quarterbacks here, yet they've been able to put up respectable numbers. I'm not going to say those numbers are great because 11 and 9 is not an ideal interception touchdown ratio, but still, they've been able to function. So I think that's a good thing. But you're right. I think it does put more pressure on Zach Wilson coming back, even though he is a rookie. You want to see him maintain the standard that other players, supposedly less talented players, were able to uphold. It's Thanksgiving week, and for many reasons, I always think back to 1995. Now, this might be a frightening thought for some Jet fans, but there are some parallels between then and now. Back then, the Jets were a two-win team under a first-year coach, Rich Kotite. Now, they're a two-win team under a first-year coach in Robert Saleh. Back then, it was a road trip to Seattle. This week, it's a road trip to Houston. Back then, team owner Leon Hess, who attended every practice on Thanksgiving Day, gathered his players on the field and delivered a fiery pep talk about the importance of playing for pride. And he concluded his speech by telling the players, quote, "Let's go out and show them we're not a bunch of horses' asses," end quote. It made huge headlines in the New York papers the next day. Actually, if it happened now, the video of the speech would have gone viral instantly. Sure enough, they listened. The Jets upset a mediocre Seattle team and then promptly lost the rest of their games. Ah, memories. Maybe Woody Johnson should take a page out of his predecessor's playbook and give a horse's ass a speech, although I don't think he has that kind of gumption. Full disclosure, I did not witness the Hess speech. I was on the Jets beat for Newsday at the time, but I had more important matters on my mind. I was in a Long Island hospital because my son Matt was born that day. Happy birthday to Matt, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Thanks again for listening. I want to thank our guest this week, Elijah Moore, our producer, Jeff Scopin. Enjoy the holiday, and we'll talk to you next week on Flight Deck.